Welcome to Edumeasure, a new podcast for teachers, students, parents, and others concerned with transforming teaching and learning. Our goal is to explore creative and innovative responses to current challenges in education. I'm your host, Bernd Esterbrook, a professor at a small liberal arts college in Illinois, and today's episode is part of a series of episodes with teachers and students, all of whom are, so to speak, on the front lines of teaching and learning, committed to excellence in the day-to-day experience of the classroom. These professionals are not your familiar academic experts or pundits in the usual sense. Some of them are experienced hands, while others are still learning the ropes, but all of them are dedicated to teaching young people in a classroom setting. For today's podcast, I'll be interviewing a professor who is experimenting with the day-to-day challenges of opening students to provocative perspectives in his field, in the context of the liberal arts. Our discussions about teaching and learning prompted me to invite him on the podcast today, as he is committed to a classroom that is both imaginative, intriguing, and dedicated to knowledge that possesses both breadth and depth. Dr. Dane Wendell is an associate professor of political science. He received his undergraduate BA degree from Rhodes College, completing his master's and PhD in political science at Loyola University, Chicago. I'll let him tell you a bit more about himself. Ding?
Hi, Baron. Thanks so much for inviting me to do this. I'm really excited to talk about these things with you. And also, this is the first time I have actually been addressed as an associate professor. I've been an associate professor for 19 days. So here's to 19 more.
That sounds great. I'm going to start off with my first question then. Now, this interview is designed to center around a few questions that deal with your experiments and efforts to build the transformative classroom. I'm interested in the ideals that inform your teaching and how you and your students realize those ideals or attempt to do so. So my first question is, how is what you are teaching and how you are teaching it transformational? What does the best classroom look like and what would we see if we were there?
Yeah, so I teach in political science, and I do a lot of research in political psychology as well. So my courses tend to draw students from a wide range of backgrounds, just as a gen ed requirement, but also our psychology students are often looking for upper level elective style classes. And I teach a class on political psychology and also another one that is basically on biology and politics, including some evolutionary psychology. So when we think about, you know, what does transformation look like in a class? So my background in political science makes me think a lot about citizenship as the core value for what we're trying to get at in the courses. So, what do good citizens need to have? What are our responsibilities? We get rights from our government, but at the same time, those rights impose on us obligations for how we need to act. And my students know more than anybody in the last couple of years that democracy can be surprisingly fragile too, and it sometimes can come down to a couple of key people in the right place at the right time making the right moral decision to kind of hold the whole thing together. Yeah, so I think a lot about citizenship and about how to build citizenship traits in students through the material.
I mean, that's obviously a relevant perspective given recent history, the social situation and political situation in our society today. All right, well, the next question here is, what is the most important thing that your students do or should do, the thing that they take with them when they leave a remarkable classroom or course? How do we know that they took it with them, and how do we assess what they've done?
So this is kind of interesting. So I had an idea for what I'm trying to express to these students in class and what, the skills I want them to take forward. And we've got these core liberal arts skills that are just tremendously important, woven into everything we're doing. But I have to tell you, I think the students have actually told me what the most valuable part of the class is. And so what I hear just over and over and over again is they feel like in my political science classes, they can have actual political conversations with each other, and they are just petrified about talking about politics in public. And so the class becomes a kind of a way for them to not only just explore what they think about politics, which I hope all political science classes do, but also they're practicing how to engage with each other about these core questions and ideas. And so one of the things that I do in my 100-level class, an introduction to U.S. federal government class, we do this project called the Citizen Jury Project. And the project is modeled around treating the class of students as if they are, in fact, a group of citizen jurors who have an important political question or a public policy topic that they need to talk about. And the group of jurors are actually educated by a group of experts who give them the pro side and the con side of any given argument. And so we're trying to model citizenship by having these experts basically teach jurors about the issue, but leaving the decision-making and the question asking to the jurors. And so over the years, the students have just told me that that's their big takeaway. And I get a surprising amount of comments from students about how they feel like they'll say things like, I can express my political views better in this class than in other classes I've been. And I think it's because they feel like this is a place where, in fact, there is an expectation that we'll be talking about hard issues, and we kind of build that into the culture.
Can you give me some sense of what accounts for the fear that you were describing there? What is it that makes them so afraid to do this, in other words? And that, of course, is a real contrast in your classroom, but can you give me some sense about what you think, what you see in that regard?
Saying the wrong thing in the wrong audience will ruin your life. You know, that's and you know, I don't even know how much I'm joking about that. Like, people feel this pressure intensely, you know, and they, a lot of times they feel like they may have a belief about politics, but they're like, well, what is the actual cost-benefit analysis of me saying what I really think about a given issue? It seems like all downside, you know, if the students are even thinking that strategically about it. So they're scared of engaging in politics because they fear how, you know, the room will respond and how it might affect their reputation. They're also aware, because they're smart, they're aware that on many political questions, there are, at least publicly, there's just two sides. And if you say that you're on one side, you've automatically made a bunch of friends and then made a bunch of hated enemies for life, you know? And I hope it's not really that dire, but sometimes the students really express a great deal of anxiety about how do we talk about politics in a way where it doesn't ruin my reputation. Now, I have to say, though, there's something sort of fascinating going on in classes, though, I've detected, in that they've got this core anxiety about talking about politics, especially if they're only casual observers of politics. Okay, but here's what's interesting: they find it really interesting to actually hear other students talk about politics. So this is the paradox. They think if they talk about their own politics, it's just going to be a total, you know, a devastation of their life almost, you know. But they love hearing how other students talk about politics because they have all these minds actually are searching for the same kinds of answers on these really tough questions. And so one thing that I've just really tried to work hard on is, how do I set up a situation where they're talking to each other about politics, but also I'm trying to lower the stakes of what's actually happening? And there's a couple different ways to do this. Let me just pitch a couple at you just for fun. So one thing I've noticed is that when I do the citizen jury project, I do have the presenters do a kind of pro-con analysis, right? So it's real clear. Here are some reasons to support. Here are some reasons to oppose. But I explicitly frame the activity as not a debate. So the experts are actually, although they're pro-con, they're actually functioning as a team to try to present information. And so that makes it so that when the students are presenting, and then crucially, the jurors kind of feed on this energy, but when the presenters are presenting, they're actually not trying to cut each other down. Instead, they're providing alternatives. And when the other side makes a good point, that person doesn't actually feel under attack. They can simply say, that is an interesting point, but let's also consider this other thing. It's not a direct attack on them or their identity when it's framed in such a way.
I think you've described some really interesting things here, the pedagogy in particular. But what I'm interested in here, too, is something you may be taking for granted. And that would be relationship. Somehow, when they walk into your classroom, they are finding themselves able to do these things. And there are people who might do the same thing pedagogically you do who don't accomplish that. Can you give us some sense of how you attempt right at the start, as you're getting to know them, where you're trying to establish that trust? How do you go about doing that in your classroom?
So a lot of this seems sort of intuitive to me, but I have a couple sort of thoughts about maybe how I'd frame this. First, I actually like them. I like them as people, and I actually find them interesting, and I think that they have interesting things to say. And I think that when an instructor is in front of a class and they actually are really genuinely interested in what the students are saying, I think they feed on that energy, and it creates a different dynamic. So step one, this is probably super unhelpful, but step one is, you know, actually like them and think that they may have interesting things to say and not be scared about what they might say or how it might, you know, quote, disrupt your plans if they go in a certain direction. Second thing I'll add is that it can be really useful in a class where you're going to be having discussion and dialogues to just set a really heavy-handed expectation that we will be doing this, okay? And so there's a huge, I've had just, it's a mountain of difference between a class where I have some things I want to teach and I'll have a couple days a week, or I should say a couple days a semester, we'll have some open debates about things. There is a massive difference between how students will treat, you know, debate day or discussion day when they only do it sparingly versus when, oh no, not only are you all doing this six times this semester in a pre-described way, you're entering a long tradition of 5 years of me doing this project. You know, we are going to talk about politics. We're going to talk about politics every day, and we're going to talk to each other about politics, and I'm going to make it fun and easy for you to do so. The setting the expectation really matters. The third thing I'd say is I walk into every conversation that we're about to have optimistic about how it could go so well for the students. I don't approach it with this foreboding fear that, you know, today's abortion day. Like, this is not going to go well. And, you know, and you will have students in during discussions about abortion policy. You'll have students who start to want to tell you stories of, like, personal experiences of either going, you know, having an abortion or having a romantic partner who has the abortion, for example. You know, this stuff can derail things, and it can make it terrifying to talk about certain topics. But the students feel your energy, and they know if you're scared, they know they're supposed to be scared too. And so I think really carefully about how to walk into it with good intentions and thinking carefully. And then I have a motto that I teach them to think about. And it's this idea that when we're participating in this class, let's never forget, we're here to practice. And practicing means we are all going to make mistakes. So you need to do two things. You've got to be brave. You need to be brave for yourself so that you can grow into the kind of person that you want to be, number one. And number two, you need to be brave for the other folks in class because they need you. They need your leadership. You also, though, not just being brave, you've also got to be forgiving. And you need to know that anybody can say the wrong thing, including your professor, by the way. Anybody can say the wrong thing. And we can forgive them, and we can let them restate it. We can let them change their mind, and it's okay to change their mind later on. And that sets the groundwork for how to have just real discussions, I think, when it concerns politics.
Okay. This is fascinating, and there are lots of ways we could go with this, but I would like to go to look at some of the real challenges. I mean, what is the single most important obstacle or challenge? You've implied some of them in your discussion already. To excellent teaching and learning in today's environment. Where can we expect difficulty, opposition, misunderstanding, confusion? And what can we do to forestall or ameliorate or integrate such obstacles so that we can succeed in repurposing and reforming our education?
I think the obstacles are, number one, instructor intimidation. I can talk more about that in a second. Number two, cynicism is a really big problem. Okay. And then let me just add number three, we have a kind of political fatigue right now in our society. And that can add a lot of challenges as well. Let me talk about instructor intimidation first. So instructor intimidation is a problem because it seems so dangerous for us to go into our classes and just open the door and let anyone talk about anything they want in politics.
And this applies to instructors too, right? Walking the classroom today, there are teachers who are worried with certain topics in particular about what they might say. I am sure that fear that we have carries over to our students. They can tell when we're nervous about it, and that's going to make them nervous too, right?
Yeah. Yeah, they're nervous about their own reputations, and they know that we are worried about our reputations because we're all humans. And so when you think about, you know, talking about politics in the classroom, everyone is expecting it to go really bad and go off the rails. And so we want to like hang back, we want to hide from it, we want to divert from it. And then I just think this is really important too. There is a very strong temptation for the professor to basically pretend they are not political at all and step away from it and avoid it.
Objectivity, right? The idea that, okay, we're objective, unlike you, we're objective, and it is possible to be perfectly objective, which is an illusion.
So we talked about relationships, building relationships with students earlier, and I just want you to think about this for a second, right? This is so important. Imagine a student comes up to you, and they say, you know, Dr. Esterbrook, I just saw this recent Supreme Court decision about this issue. I am really interested in this. I don't know how I feel about it. What does this mean and what do you think about it? Okay. Now, if you're in your office, it's sort of a semi-private conversation. You may decide, I can tell them what I think about this, or I can give them the information that I'm using to think through this case, and I can help educate them, right? When a student does that in a class, though, you will have an immediate reaction to want to actually back away from that question, because you know that it is a dangerous question where you might, quote, lose control of what's going on. Here's what I'm trying to say. What better way to ruin your teaching relationship than to tell a student who had a genuine question that your question is, in fact, not something I can answer right now? And a lot of times I don't think we do this on purpose, but we may even come across a little bit like, oh, student, I actually can't give you my opinion on that position because you haven't earned to hear my opinion yet, or you are actually too low status to hear my actual opinion about this issue. You are a student and you should be focusing on different. I hope you can hear it in my voice. I just think this is terrible. And when students come to you and they want to know stuff, like, you tell them, and you tell them your view on things when they ask you for it. And that's a key thing. I just think about when I was at Rhodes College. It was just an amazing education, small liberal arts school in Memphis, Tennessee. I had professors, they come to mind, Mark McMahon in economics and Mark Pullman in political science, Steve Wurls in political science, Dan Cullen in political science. I could just keep going. There's so many of them. When I was at Rhodes College, when we talked about politics, my professors told me what they thought about politics, and I learned from that. They modeled to me how to think about politics, how to think about my place in the American political system. They modeled for me how to think about evidence and how to weigh evidence. And they modeled to me how to communicate, you know, controversial opinions to other people. And I just think about our environment today and how much professors feel like they shouldn't be doing that. But then it's really just a lost opportunity to actually be connecting with someone on these issues.
So let's imagine that one of our listeners is saying, well, you know, I have trouble with this because I'm worried about undue influence, given the fact that I'm an authority figure as a professor. If I tell them what I really think, either A, some of them are look and say, he's trying to make me think, or she's trying to make me think like they do, or they're just going to adopt it because they're uncritical in various ways. So some people might say, okay, we need to keep them guessing. How would you respond there? Because I think your point is an important one. And navigating that, I'm betting for a lot of our listeners, is a really difficult problem.
We couldn't do this if we wanted to. I wish that professors had more undue influence over our students. They're remarkably resilient to my influence. I'm not sure your experience, Barrett. But I think that it actually, you know, we've seen some studies on this where professors really don't have a very big impact on the politics of their students based on the data that I've seen. A recent study I saw, this is super interesting to me, liberal professors had an extremely negligible amount of influence on students' political views. Now, college students do change politics over time, but the key attribute of these studies is that the politics of the students may be shifting, but it's not actually due to specific professors or even specific disciplines necessarily. And, you know, I'm not sure even how reliable this finding ultimately was, but there was a statistically significant result that it was actually some conservative professors who had the ability to very slightly shift students' politics in a conservative way. But we're talking about like tiny things, so nowhere near, you know, undue influence. So let me just say on this, so like, you know, am I worried about undue influence? No, because I don't really think that we have that kind of power, first of all. But number two, you know, I'm not worried about influence because I'm not really trying to teach them what they should think about politics. And frankly, I don't think many professors are really interested in that at all. Like this, the ideological professor, maybe I've met a few, but my average colleague just has zero interest in that whatsoever. So what we're trying to do is be educators. And educators means that when the students have questions and they come to us, we're trying to do the very best we can to help them find answers to their questions. And if in my realm of politics, when they come to me and ask questions about, you know, does this matter? Or really hard questions like, you know, when does life begin? Or, you know, how much should we be concerned about executive overreach in the Oval Office or something like that? Like, my job is to be there to answer those questions. And I'm not going to run away from that because I'm afraid that I'm going to be unduly influencing students.
What has inspired you as an instructor? You've already brought in a couple ideas, some models you've had in the past, but what really inspired you and made you decide that you wanted to teach?
At Rhodes, in this liberal arts environment, it was about discussions in class. It was about doing primary source readings. It was about rolling up our sleeves, but also talking with each other and engaging on the questions. And to this day, I just think that's the most exciting part of life for me, is to be able to do those things with students. It helped me develop a lot of really important cognitive tools for thinking through how to pursue questions, how to get knowledge. And I just was so inspired by all that I just knew this is what I needed to do as a career.
All right. Well, what will or should teaching and learning look like in the next decade?
Okay. I feel really strongly about this, that just as how for thousands of years, there have been teachers who have worked with small groups of students in-person education, I actually think we are going to continue that model. In fact, probably for thousands of years. And I know I'm like way out of the current times on this, where we're talking about AI educators and online education. I honestly think all that stuff is great. I think all that will be useful. I don't understand how to use AI as a learning tool, but I am absolutely convinced that, in fact, this will be a fantastic learning tool once we and the students start to understand how to do this. But I'm telling you, education is always going to be about the relationship between student to student and student to teacher. And this stuff cannot be done in the way that people want in a kind of online or asynchronous manner. There will always be a core need for person-to-person dialectic. You know, Plato had a lot of things right, and he certainly had that right too. So when I think about the future of education, I must sound like a crazy person, but I really think it's going to remain the same kind of model where we've got teachers and students working together. And the best experiences, I think the experiences that people are going to crave, it's going to be in-person education.
I'd like to thank Dr. Dane Wendell for sharing his exploration of transformational teaching and learning with us today. And I'm sure that many of our listeners will find his innovative ideas and observations applicable to their own classrooms. That concludes today's podcast. I'm your host, Bernd Esterbrook. And we hope you will find the ideas discussed in this podcast to be both useful and provocative. We are currently preparing an EduMeasure website, which should be available in a few weeks, where you will be able to comment on these episodes and identify resources for further investigation. The EduMeasure podcast is produced by Edward Leonard and Bernd Esterbrook, with help from our editing and engineering intern, Miranda Araujo. Thanks for listening.